Blog Talk Radio.
Sound Health Options Show for March 24th, 2013, with Richard Olson and...
Sherry Edwards.
Good morning. I know there's been a lot of... For those of you just getting onto, just joining us on Blog Talk, there's been a lot of backstage scurrying around and dropping and heavy sounds and cables being dragged across as we've been having some internet excitement trying to get online. I'm, you know, finally just got online on a different source. So good morning, Sherry.
Good morning.
Who's our sponsor this week?
The Institute of Bioacoustic Biology is our sponsor again, and I love talking about some exciting thing that's going on there, but I want to warn people that there are some glitches. Richard is only on Blog Talk, and I'm only on WebEx. Oh, I see Richard popped in here. But for those of you having trouble, just chat to one of the people online with you, because we are dual broadcasting, Blog Talk Radio vocal, and for those of you who are with us on WebEx, you're going to be able to watch the show, and this is going to be an incredibly important thing to watch this week. There's exciting stuff happening all over. The Institute of Bioacoustic Biology, the sponsor, was challenged this week with about 50 people getting in touch with us and saying, we've got the croupy crud, we've got the flu, it's chemtrails, and I think it's because of the show that we did last week just with chemtrails. So guys, for those of you who are bioacoustic practitioners, we found the antidote.
Wow.
You can write to me, I'll give it to you. But we found an antidote that if you can stay right with it, now we may not have the right level of the frequencies, because what we do here is test people's voices and look at all of the frequencies in the voice. We look at the idea that the brain is a central processing unit, runs on math, and a lot of the times there are pieces of those math equations falling out your head. It's not because you're open-minded. It's because there's too much electricity, too much bad food, too much Fukushima, too much bleach in your water that they're trying to make you drink. So I think that's why the government decided to take over all of the water in all these little teeny towns so they could dump in it exactly what they wanted. And I object to that. They, in Texas now, have taken over all streams, waterways, and wells. Your well, even though you paid to have it done, belongs to the government. Just like your mailbox, once you put it up, that mailbox now belongs to the government. So we are here to bring you ideas and information. Somebody's got their mic open. Please close. To bring you information and ideas in support of better health, better world, for those people who want to make a difference. And I would like to ask all of you, as you come in, please mute your mic. I am having a lot of trouble here keeping all of these muted mics, yeah. We have a couple of classes coming up. One, a two-day class, and we're going to be concentrating on allergies. And then we've got a five-day class, and we're going to be concentrating on detox. And you're going to find out today as we talk what the detox is all about. Today we're going to be talking about why your vitamins are not working. Here, I'm going to put some surprises out here. When I was looking for information about how to put this show together, I found a lot of genetic information about our bodies being hardwired to keep all the food that comes in. Because most of the time on this planet, humans have been without food a lot of the time. Hunter-gatherers and have to hunt for every meal and grub in the woods and whatever. And it's not until the last 40, 50 years or so that we've had such convenient foods. But our bodies are hardwired to keep everything that comes in. Now, we go to extremes here. Richard, this tells me that the people who are gaining weight, and there's about, what, 60% of us are overweight, that we're the normal ones and the skinny guys that can't gain weight, or they're the abnormal ones and they're the ones that are going to go. That turns things upside down, doesn't it?
Wow. Wow, that does turn things upside down. I've been noticing that I had been gaining weight even though I'm walking 4 and 5 miles a day. So I think that's really interesting.
Oh, come on, people.
Please mute your mic as you come into WebEx. Please mute your mic.
Do I have to? I had a sign up, please mute your mic, somewhere.
I'll put something in while you tell us about the keynote.
Oh, that's another shocker. Mute all. I'm going to go over here to, I'm going to stop sharing. I forgot that Phil told me how to go in and mute on entry so people don't have to mute their own mic. Now I will go back. Okay. That's just an interruption for those of you on Blog Talk Radio because you don't know what we're talking about. But we have a great big list of people who are with us because we have some very visual things to share today. And they're coming in with their mics open, and we're hearing all kinds of shows in the background and kids yelling, and it just needs to, I need to be sharper and say mute on entry when people come in.
And also, as I always like to say, the audio quality over at Blog Talk Radio is really good. And for those of you who might be having audio issues, you can always call in Blog Talk Radio at 347-850-1407. And the audio quality over at Blog Talk is really excellent.
And we will be having archives up also. And just in a few minutes, you'll see why the archives for this show are particularly important for WebEx that you can go watch on our site, soundhealthoptions.com. Go to the homepage and then go to radio, and the information is there. Richard, we just passed through a solstice, didn't we? From
Yes, we just had an equinox on Wednesday.
Yes, and this blows my mind. On that day, and a couple of days after, and here we are, the frequency in that has been activated is the same frequency that is the first chemical made when conception takes place, ATP, adenosine triphosphate. Now, as spring comes into being and out of the winter into the spring, this is, it's emulating how the body gets pregnant and begins to grow a new earthling.
Wow.
And then it slightly moves into oxygen and sulfur. So I just think this is an incredible thing that's happening. Like, it's primordial stuff that on this, I get, what's it called? A spring equinox?
Vernal equinox, yeah. So it really does, it brings up the phrase in my mind, you know, in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And for those of you who are new with us, and I see lots of new people here, there are frequencies that come to Earth from outer space, and our sun and our moon and all that combination is frequencies that affect the tides and moon spots and human beings, just as it affects the water in the tides, it affects the water in the body. So we always like to recommend explore the power of consciousness, water, the great mystery, because that explains to you really what is going on. We have been talking about, for a while, the idea of the business of disease and how money comes first. I just got word from Sonia that she has a new newsletter coming out. So go to thebusinessofdisease.com, a free newsletter. There are articles in there, and people, there is a free ebook. We have been talking with Jill Mattson on and off, and she was really scheduled for today, and then we decided other things needed to be moved. And by the way, there'll be no show on Easter. Nobody wants to listen to us on Easter. So Jill has written a book called Sound Secrets, very large book. Have you read that, Richard?
I've read parts of it. Yes, I have, yeah.
Well,
it's really wonderful.
Jill has decided, in support of Sonia and her video about business of disease, which has me and Bruce Lipton and a lot of other neat people. Oh, I just complimented myself. She's going to give away copies of that book. So you can go to Jill's Wings of Light. That Jill's, plural, Wings of Light, and go down to the bottom of that first page, and there is the ebook, Sound Secrets, Ultimate Healing, and it's about Sherry Edwards and how all of this bioacoustic biology got started. And you know, I used to be very embarrassed by that book. Not that the book was bad, the book's wonderful, but I was embarrassed because somebody wrote a book about me. And it felt very egotistical to be talking about that book, but it has helped so many people, and it's helped me get over being the hermit that I naturally am. So, yes, thank you, George, for putting in that Gerald's Wings of Light. Also, George reminds us that we have a new donation button on our site, and we're going to be trying to get all of this up online. There's also at the bottom, get in touch. I can't see the donation button. It must be just on the home page. But we want to get all of what we're doing online so that you can sit down at your computer and say, I want to be tested for allergies today. I'm having a problem with something, and I need to know what it is. And you talk to your computer, and it spits out reports for you, management reports, I should say. So I just think that is a great and wonderful project. George says it's only on the homepage for now. Thank you for reminding me of that. Steve and George and Moon and lots of other people post on the Blog Talk Radio and also on WebEx, so that everything that we're doing is open to the public. Oh, you know, one of the things I hate is I get this little thing, guess what food you shouldn't eat? And you click on it, and 10 minutes later, you still don't know. And 20 minutes later, oh, and I'm going to tell you in a few minutes. Oh, I'm going to tell you in a few minutes. Oh, here it is in a few minutes. I just turn that stuff off. I know at that point it's to sell you something. And here we are on our site trying to give things away and help start these community centers. And people still question us about, well, why are you giving it away? It can't be any good. Well, we're giving it away at a great detriment to ourselves. There are 15 softwares that we are giving away. And the one that we want to do right now is to help these returning soldiers. So if you have a group in your community, you want to start a group, you want to organize a group, we want to do a PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, and traumatic brain injury class for your group. And most of the time, we can do it for free. Now, if it costs us a lot, and your local person has to rent a room or something, that's okay too. You charge at the door. But we want to get these centers up and running using these softwares. Biohazards, check your people for chemtrails. And that's, we had all these people calling us, you know, I'm sick because of this. And we had them send in vocal prints, and we figured out the commonality of what's being dropped on us. That's the kind of organization that we can do and start a better system, because our healthcare center, our healthcare system, is in crisis, and it's not working. Last night, I slurped the whole end of my thumb off with a sharp knife trying to make chili, and I was determined I am not going to go to the emergency room and have this sewn up. So I went in and got a sound for skin integrity, and I put it on. I put a little Band-Aid around this, and I really chunked a piece out of my finger. I have no pain. It's healing back. This can happen in your community too. We don't have to be stuck with this, and we don't have to sit down, lay down, and let our doctors be abused either, because they are being abused, and it's just got to stop. I think the medical system's okay in an emergency, but even you broke your arm, and we have sounds for that can help the body heal faster. You know, there's this thing out, some guy and somebody of you sent me this information, which I have quickly lost. You need to send it and put great big letters on it. Don't lose this one. But there's a guy who wants to build a tricorder, like on Star Trek, and we already have it. And each time I've tried to get in touch with these people, I get nowhere. So is that the universe telling me don't get in touch with people? I don't know. Jeremy?
Maybe. I want to toss in an herbal tip for bleeding, because sometimes, having been a chef for a long time, I have cut myself. And this sounds really, really bizarre, but it works incredibly well. In an emergency, that when you cut yourself, if you take, everybody just blur their mind for a moment, and what I'm going to say is going to, you know, freak people out. So what you do is you take straight cayenne pepper, not chili blend, but just straight cayenne pepper, and you put it directly on the cut. And cayenne pepper has a specific relationship to hemostatic action. It causes blood to stop flowing. And yes, it stings. It doesn't burn at all like you would think because it's cayenne pepper, but it does sting just because it stings. But it will really stop bleeding quite effectively. I don't mean gushing out of a vein, but in terms of like cutting in the flesh and really cutting something, the cayenne pepper really helps stop bleeding amazingly well and disinfects at the same time. So in an emergency, it works really well.
Excellent. But we're going to talk about that in just a few minutes. It's going to be the next topic, because what we want to talk about today really is about vitamins. And remember that with Jill, she's going to be back on the 14th of April, and she's going to talk about her new book and give away some books. And she's got a whole campaign put together about how to get this ancient information to people. So today we're going to be talking about why your vitamins aren't working, optimal diets, good supplies of nutrition. As we say, many of us are getting overweight, and one of the things that happens, and this happens all the time, when I'm going to do a show, somebody sends me this wonderful, wonderful film, and we're going to show parts of that instead of me just blobbling on. And one of the things it says in there that we are eating empty calories. We are being starved. And that's an incredible thing you'll hear in this. But we have some things that we would like to share before we show you this video, which is free now to the public. And one of them is about herbs, and herbs losing their potency down through the ages. Richard, can you talk about that?
Well, it makes sense. I mean, I know a bunch of herbalists who grow their own herbs biodynamically, permaculture, I mean, all the right things, so that they end up with the strongest possible herbs out there. But, you know, if you think about agribusiness and how they don't really put micronutrients back into the soil, either in the form of minerals or, you know, full-spectrum food fertilizers, it makes sense that the herbs would be getting less strong because they're just not getting the full spectrum of micronutrients, just like our bodies. As I'm certain we'll develop a conversation talking about micronutrients and how our bodies heal or how they need those, you know, micronutrients in the process of methylation. And herbs have gotten weaker and weaker. And there also is, this will be a mini rant, there's also a lean in the herbal industry, not so much from the herbalists as much as from the companies manufacturing substances, to give guaranteed potency in an herb. And that's a tricky area because that's very much in the guise of a pharmaceutical-like way of thinking about an herb. An herb is a whole food. Yes, there are substances in that herb that you're looking for that have specific actions, but it's the whole food aspect of an herb itself that has all the compounds and constituents in it that have the package of how that herb functions in the body. And so the lean toward that end, yes, herbs themselves have gotten weaker. So you always want to kind of know who your suppliers are and where you're getting product from.
Well, know, too, that a lot of the herb and good food companies are being bought up by pharmaceutical companies and just jacking everything around till we don't have FOOD, we have FUDE food that is really artificial, horrid food. Somebody sent me an email and said that in some natural product, there was 51 ingredients, and two-thirds of them they couldn't read. Now, how can they say that's natural? Well, here you go with the government again. You can say it's natural based on this, this, and this experiment. But there was an experiment with a ketchup, not an experiment, a company wanted to call ketchup, and flavor it with honey. And since that wasn't in the recipe, they couldn't call it ketchup. I mean, that's just stupid. Know, too, that with an herb, you know, with a medication, you get like one thing. But with an herb, you get a whole series of frequencies and notes. And I can't remember what that's called in music, like a chord, I think. When you play four or five notes together, that's what an herb is like. When you begin to break down the constituent parts of an herb, Okay, we got some funny things being said in the chat here. That's good. For those of you who can't see the chat and you're with us on WebEx, go up to that little green tab. It'll be at the top or the bottom of your screen, and you can pull down the chat and see what everybody is talking about. So even with herbs, they're losing their potency. Carrots. They can't even give you constituents now of what's in a carrot in the physics books because the soil is so different all over the place. Another thing that we want to share with people is we've created something called a nutrient assimilation chart. And even if you get the right nutrients, they require that you have component parts. We just had a lady in last week. And her problem was bone density. And she couldn't use the vitamin D, and it was genetic. So we were able to go back and look at the genetic parts of why she couldn't use vitamin D, get her some very good vitamin D from Pure Encapsulation, which is liquid, and then she's going to be able to use her calcium and phosphorus. But that's the kind of thing that we can look at inside your frequency matrix that comes from your voice. So for those of you who are on WebEx, we are looking at what we call a nutrient assimilation chart. And I am looking at the amino acid section, alanine, metabolizes tryptophan and B6. Tryptophan helps you sleep and all that. constituent of B5 and coenzyme A. Yes, read the label. We will give you, anybody who wants to write to me, just my name, Sherry Edwards at Gmail, and it's Sherry with an A, S-H-A-R-R-Y. And if you want to put this up on your Twitter or your Facebook, we'll give you the link so that you can share this with everybody on the planet, hopefully, because it gives you those sister components. And as you look at all of these nutrients and vitamins and minerals, and particularly the minerals, because that's what's being depleted out of the soil, and they're putting it back with kind of trash stuff and manure, human manure, and just causing us to be sick. So they're stripped. So those of you who want the nutrition program, that's one of the things that we're going to be sharing in that two-day class. It'll give you information about what nutrients you need, what nutrients you have, what nutrients are overabundant and not working. And this little magic chart will help you explain that. Oh, somebody is saying they cannot read the label. So I don't exactly know what that means.
No, they're actually saying read the label. In other words, what I'm actually saying is pay attention to the labels. Read, don't trust what the front of the package says with the bright, shiny, you know, big, natural, new, improved, better. Turn around, read the label, see what's actually in there. I try not to buy anything that I can't read and actually pronounce easily.
Oh, yes. That was another article we found. If you can't pronounce it, don't eat it. So we will make this available to you. Now, there's another piece that we found, and this is from one of our programs called Methylation Mapping. That's another one of the free programs that we have available. When we look at the foods that contain sulfites, now those are the bad guys. Those are the processing things that cause things to last 1,000 years. And they're not good in your body because they don't allow the sulfites to be turned into sulfates. And they need molybdenum and taurine and coenzyme A and a lot of other nice things. And this is lacking. So we don't have the information in the body to produce sulfur. And sulfur is a cofactor for many vitamins and amino acids. So things don't get used, and then you get this methylation problem. Now, right now, that, bioacoustically speaking, that keynote that's coming to the earth, it's setting right on top of sulfur right now. And we're moving from the ATP we talked about into oxygen and then into sulfur. So in the next few days, I would take some sulfur-based bees or some sulfur digestive enzymes. I'd go in and test my voice using nanovoice.org, free, by the way. And sulfur is the note of C, so if that's down and you aren't some big egotistical person, because that's the profile for it, the note of C also. But to think about sulfur foods, eggs, and the sulfur content of eggs is going down, down, down. Sulfur content of vegetables and foods. And this is boxed food. They have these sulfites. And now here's a sort of a list. Baked goods, pretzels, pie crust, waffles, frostings, toppings, jams, vinegar, salad dressing, maple syrup, powdered sugar, brown sugar, raw sugar, white sugar, fish, scallops, shrimp, crab, canned clams, dried fruit snacks, pudding, hard candy, potato chips, trail mix, spinach pasta, cake, rice mixes, cornstarch, maraschino cherries, canned vegetables, instant potatoes, chives, spices, raisins, glazed fruit, fresh potato. How can fresh potatoes have this in it? beer, wine, coolers. I mean, what's left that you get at the grocery store? A great music in C, Third Symphony by French composer Saint, most famous C major chord. Oh, so Norm in the chat here, and this might be sent on to the people in our Blog Talk chat, that's a great thing right now. He's saying there's this music in the note of C, Third Symphony by French composer Saint Saens, I don't know, S-A-E-N-S, and that music will help put those frequencies back into your system. When Norm, if you know lots of wonderful stuff like that, let's make up a list for people. So we have these sulfur foods that say stay away from this. We have this list of what foods go together with what other foods called a nutrient assimilation chart. And there is a third one that is just absolutely mind-boggling. And I got this yesterday from the book. Remember when we had Maya and Jason on?
Oh, yes, yes. They were wonderful. Wow.
They had another book called Naked Calories. And in there was another chart that we had typed up for you. It's got their copyrights and everything on it. And it tells you what medication interferes with your micronutrients. There are millions of people on these medications. Diuretics for osteoporosis, and how the medication, I wish I could pronounce this, Actinol, Fosamax, Glucophage, that's a diabetic medication, it messes up your folic acid, your B12, and your B1. Well, B1 helps all of the organs stay integral. B12 helps with your digestion. Folic acid helps with your body repleting itself. No wonder these guys get ulcers and sores where the body won't heal. The medication is interfering. I'm looking at pages and pages here. Yes, Jessica, you can get a copy of this chart. We're hoping to have it up on the site. Let me see if they've got it up. Go back to Sound Health. To listen to the show online, password. Dialing insertion. Okay, the charts are not here yet. Just write to me and I will give you these three things. The chart about sulfites, although you can find it yourself online, just sulfur-containing foods. The nutrient assimilation chart, which is a chart we created for our students. And then this third chart from the Caltons that shows you what nutrients interfere. Look at these statin drugs. And we had some people on about how statin drugs kill you, Lipitor and Crestor and those kinds of things. They get rid of your enzymatic CoQ10, which is it's part of the life force of the body. And that CoQ10 goes, and a lot of processes in the body really suffer, and you age really quick. So those three things, I think, are incredibly important. We also need to let the people know who have created the film you're about to watch that they have left out a few things. Now, we have arranged to have the show go over. This is a film that was sent to me by Paula Hall, one of our practitioners in Australia. When we put out something that we're going to have a show about things like this, people send us incredible things and things that are much more better put together than I already had done. So this is incredible. It's free and it's here until March 31st, free online for you to watch. Richard, do you have any comments before we start this?
No, let's dive right in. I mean, I could rail on about any number of things, but I think we should dive right into the film. It's wonderful.
For those of you on Blog Talk with us, showing a woman trying to stir herself awake at 7 in the morning and how tired she is. She just can't quite seem to wake up and face the day.
It seems really odd in today's world that we have more than ever before, and yet we think in a very lack state. There's a world of abundance and an attitude of lack.
The problem is that we are not eating food anymore. We are eating food-like products. And they are adorned. They are made to look better and smell better so that people are attracted to them.
The marketing essentially lies to you because it presents you with
a product. This is Mike Adams.
Sexy and popular and cool, but in reality, you're going to be obese and miserable and sick.
I think we're barking up the wrong tree. People are looking for a result that is superficial. They're looking just to look good. And they don't really consider that that could be done from the inside out.
The first chapter of the first book that I ever wrote was called Diets Don't Work, because they're temporary. They have failure built right into them.
You can lose weight on a diet, but it's a little bit like borrowing from Peter to pay Paul. I mean, you can get 10 pounds off your body from sheer force, but you're going to have to pay back with interest.
People know this. Why are highly intelligent people not stopping? Because they don't know the nature of the trap.
There was a point where I allowed myself to get to 300 pounds. And that world, as opposed to the current world, is vastly different.
Life was just not fun. You know, the only fun I had was watching people on TV having fun.
I was over 400 pounds, and I had very bad sleep apnea. I was borderline type 2 diabetic.
I was a cheeseburger away from a heart attack, and I said, no more.
This is how we are as mammals.
It's not your fault. You're programmed to put on fat whenever there is food available.
I was 31 when I realized I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know how to take care of myself, and I am sick. And so I had to go back and learn all the things I wish I had known as a child.
Sugar is without question the cocaine of the food world, but they kind of get away with hiding that drug within quote-unquote food.
Sugar is in everything. In America, we're eating about 22 teaspoons of sugar a day.
When we get onto our real diet, in the sense of what a species habitually eats to sustain itself, we don't have to think about these things anymore. This is a really prevalent problem today because people are overfed, but they're also starving to death.
Body's basic survival laws. The whole dieting paradigm is flawed.
It's not just what you're eating. It's also what's eating you.
Wow.
All through our history as a species, the big challenge is to find calories. And so our bodies are biologically adapted to this. We seek calorie sources. When I say that, I particularly what I'm talking about are fats and sugars. we taste something fatty or something sweet, we get an immediate signal saying, yes, I want more of this. Because for our hunter-gatherer ancestors, and that goes right up to a few hundred years ago, anywhere they could find fat or sugar meant survival for those people. It meant carrying forth their genetics.
It's not your fault. This is how we are as mammals. I mean, we've lived on the earth for millennia where there was a food shortage. You're programmed to put on fat whenever there is food available. But now there's a lot of food available, but it's the wrong kind. And so we've been programmed for millennia to store up for the winter. But the winter doesn't come.
Thousands of years ago, when we lived outdoors and we didn't know where our next meal was coming from, if there was a famine because it was a cold winter or whatever reason, your body is going to want to hold extra weight to protect you from that. And a famine is a stress. And if you go through that stress, your body's going to say, we need an extra 10 pounds to protect us against famines.
But one of the really interesting things about hunter-gatherer people, people who do a very moderate amount of agriculture, we could call them hunter-gatherer gardeners. What we see in those people is that they have an extremely high amount of nutrition, an extremely low amount of calories in their food compared to people in modern civilization, which have a very high amount of calories and a very low amount of nutrition available to them. Today, we have so many calorie sources, but we still have the same signal. So somebody bites into a burger or they take a sip off a milkshake and they get those fats and those sugars and their body says, yes, more, because it's used to behaving in an environment where there's feast and there's famine. The problem is we got feast like nobody's business. We just don't have any famine.
You could be eating to your heart's content. You could eat 10,000 calories a day. And if you're not getting the specific nutrients your body needs in a way that they can digest and assimilate, then you're starving on a nutritional basis. And as long as you're starving on a nutritional basis, your body's going to stay hungry to get those specific nutrients. Now, man-made foods like bread and sugar trick your body into thinking, and table salt, as a matter of fact, trick your body into thinking you're getting specific nutrients. And so your body stays hungry for them, but then the cells don't get nourished. And as long as the cells aren't getting nourished, you're starving on a cellular level.
So what happens for average person is, today in our civilization, is they're not getting enough, say, vitamin A. They're not getting enough vitamin D. They're not even getting enough vitamin C. They're chronically starved of nutrients, so they keep eating and eating and eating. But the foods that they keep eating don't have enough of these nutrients for them ever to get the stock that they need. But what those foods do have is a lot of calories. So what happens is they start to pack these calories onto their body in the form of body fat. And the body starts to accumulate or bioaccumulate too much, not just fat, but also all the associated pollutants that are in that food supply. We see things like diabetes. Right? We see blood sugar imbalance issues, and we see a lot of weight gain. And so this is a really prevalent problem today because people are overfed, but they're also starving to death.
I was 31 when I realized, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know how to take care of myself, and I am sick. And so I had to go back and learn all the things I wish I had known as a child, as a teenager, as a young adult. Step one was just going back and understanding, how do I take care of myself? What do I put in this body that is compromised at this point? You know, how do I boost my immune system? How do I increase my longevity? And again, that comes back to what you eat, what you drink, and what you think.
From a very cursory surface perspective, what's actually happened is that we left farms, we got to living in cities, and forgot about our instincts. And that's led to an obesity crisis. It's led to a crisis of misunderstanding of what a natural diet includes. And it's also left us with a little bit of a despair and confusion. We don't know what to do now.
problem is that we are not eating food anymore. We are eating food-like products. And they are adorned. They are made to look better and smell better and be presented so that people are attracted to them. And not only that, they are also made so that they can have a long shelf life. Otherwise, the supermarket would be losing money and the manufacturers as well. So the objective is not really to give you a healthy product, is to give you a product that will make you buy it, that will last long, and will make a lot of profit for the company that's producing it, right?
Okay, 9:15. Could be worse. Oh yeah, it's worse. Oh my goodness, it's Jason.
Hi there.
Hi.
Your hair looks nice today.
He likes my hair. Hang on, what's that supposed to mean? What about every other day? He's looking at you. Quick, say something. Thanks. You too.
We've got this processed junk food diet that people are on, but it's also combined with this new, relatively new, indoor lifestyle. You know, our bodies were not designed to sit at desks under fluorescent lights in an office cubicle and chow down processed junk food all day long without getting exercise. And if you do just one of these things, it may not be so bad, but by combining them both, then you end up with a disaster where you've got way too many calories, not enough nutrients, and not enough use of those calories.
And those particular factors, when combined together, create an obesity epidemic. They create a low energy epidemic. They create a fog in cognition. They create an environment where people begin to lose the will to take self-responsibility, so then they turn it all over to a doctor who's only able to prescribe a pharmaceutical pill, which doesn't address the real symptoms, which are varied and complex.
For me, the biggest cause of obesity, bar none, is addiction. But to understand the level of addiction that we've got might be challenging for some, because, of course, people can understand the addiction to cigarettes, because that has now been proven. They can understand the addiction to alcohol. But with food, people say, look, I can stop eating. But unfortunately, like the tobacco companies, if you go back in the late 60s, early 70s, and they knowingly added more nicotine to cigarettes in order to make them addictive. I used to smoke 40, 60 cigarettes a day. Why did I? One cigarette led to a chain reaction that then led to another one and another one, another one. Now look, I said to people, look, the reason why I smoke is because I enjoy it, because I love it. But I would hit my head on the pillow praying that I'd wake up and become a non-smoker every day. Every smoker on earth would love to not one cigarette if they could. There is an invisible prison, if you will, that encaptures people in the nicotine trap. The need for a cigarette is only caused by the last one, because when you have a cigarette, nicotine goes in your system. Nicotine has to get out of your system or you will die. When somebody has a cigarette, after they're withdrawn from nicotine, it replaces the nicotine back into their bloodstream. And they feel better. They feel good. But that's like putting on a pair of tight shoes to get the pleasure of taking them off. And the way that cigarettes are addictive is much in the same way that certain foods are addictive. They know why they shouldn't do it, but they have no idea why they are doing it. The food companies engineer addictions, I believe, into many of the foods.
The food industry is multi-billions, tens of billions of dollars, and they have the wherewithal and the science resources to really identify very carefully what appeals to the average consumer. And as a result of that, they can use these chemical derivatives to create these concoctions, which really taste quite good and can have an addictive component.
MSG is in 80% of all flavored foods that you get at a restaurant, that you get at a grocery store. It makes you want to eat more, but it does something else. It actually excites a part of your brain that's in charge of the fat programs. The chemical of MSG excites the brain. And due to that excitation, your body activates the fat programs and gets fatter. And everybody knows this. Everybody, scientists know this. Everybody knows this, and no one's saying anything. How do I know everybody knows this? Well, when you want to study obesity and you want to study a fat mouse, you've got to make a mouse fat, because mice aren't fat. So the way you make a mouse fat is you feed them MSG. And there's even a term for it, MSG obesity-induced mice. If you do a search for MSG obesity-induced mice, you'll see tons of research reports where they talk about, well, the protocol was we made the mouse fat, feeding them this much MSG, blah, 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 and then we studied this, and the other thing. They're not studying that. They're just, that's the protocol for making a mouse fat. It's feeding them MSG. And this is in 80% of modern-day foods.
A processed refined sugar food or a soda, it will deliver something, a biochemical change in your brain. It will make you momentarily uplifted or momentarily happy. And people get used to that feeling, and they want to slam cookies or cake or soda to get that momentary feeling of feeling elated. But then that feeling soon, very quickly, drops off, and you're left empty. You know, where's the food? Where are the nutrients? Where are the things that the body and the mind really crave? And the answer, from the food company's point of view, is to go back and buy another can. If I was in the food industry, what am I looking to do? I want to sell you more food. That's all I want to do. Now, how can I do that? I can manipulate the chemical structure of their food so that it now becomes not fulfilling, but empty. But gives the impression, when they very first ingest it, that it is the most fulfilling thing they've ever had.
Nothing else does it in your brain quite like a diet cola. And that's because there's a deadly combination there of aspartame and caffeine. And those two together create a very unique blend of excitotoxin that kills off brain cells. But before they die, they have this excitement that's like a buzz. So what you find with the diet cola addicts is that they'll drink sometimes a liter, 2 liters a day, and particularly women do it as a way to keep their weight down. They don't eat. They just have the next buzz of diet colas.
Aspartame causes formaldehyde buildup in the brain. It causes frontal lobe inflammation.
Migraines can be a common one. Visual disturbances.
Symptoms that mimic multiple sclerosis. There's headaches, there's neurologic problems.
Seizures in more serious cases.
Cognitive problems, and can in fact lead to different types of cancers.
Actually, it's most pilots are aware that they can't drink diet sodas because it's well recognized within the pilot association that you just don't drink this because it can really cause severe aberrations in your vision that will potentially lead to problems with your flying. If you look at the studies that examined the toxicity of aspartame done by Dr. Walton, of the 90 studies that were done that showed that there was no side effects from aspartame, over 90% of those were funded by industry.
And they have almost the same number of other studies that were independently funded, finding the exact reverse, 90% of them showing problems with it.
Some of the artificial sweeteners have been proven not only to have horrific side effects over a long period of use, but they cause carbohydrate cravings. So when somebody has a diet drink and they're wondering why they're not getting thin and why they're craving even more carbohydrates, it's because those substances have been very, very carefully designed, not to help you. They're into just selling and marketing.
So yeah, there's zero calories in diet soda, but studies have shown that if you drink diet soda, within a couple of years, you will be fatter than when you first started drinking the diet soda.
Unfortunately, when a food additive like aspartame or any artificial sweetener is manufactured, the process of getting approval is really the manufacturer, the company that's making it, is the one that funds the studies. And those are the studies that are submitted to the regulatory agency to provide approval. So it's not this independent, third-party, objective evaluation that's being done, like most people's impression. I think most people believe the FDA actually has their own scientists that do this analysis, but that nothing could be further from the truth. It basically evaluates the studies that the industry submits that they funded.
So we know that the food companies realize that many of their ingredients are very addictive. And, you know, the tobacco companies did it for decades. They're still doing it. If you addict a customer, you have a customer for life. Food companies do much the same thing with different chemicals. It's not nicotine, it's the MSG, it's the processed sugars, it's the aspartame, it's these other chemicals. But it's the same idea. It's just like selling cigarettes. You're selling food that's harmful, and you want people to keep coming back, so you put in those chemicals that make them want it again and again. The marketing essentially lies to you because it presents you with this image of a can of soda, let's say, and it doesn't tell you what's in the can. What it says is that this can, if you drink it, it's going to bring you these benefits by association. You're going to be cool. You're going to be sexy. You're going to be happy. You're going to be surrounded by friends wearing skimpy bikinis or whatever their message happens to be. This is a lie. The truth is, if you drink that soda, you're going to lose bone mineral density because of the phosphoric acid it contains. If it's a diet soda, you may suffer neurological problems due to the chemical sweeteners. And if it's not a diet soda, it probably is made with high fructose corn syrup in North America and elsewhere around the world, and that's going to promote diabetes, type 2, and obesity. So, you know, on one hand, here's the promise, you're going to be sexy and popular and cool, but in reality, you're going to be obese and miserable and unhealthy and sick. The marketers are telling you this, but what they deliver is this.
We are now coming to a point where we are wary. More and more people are wary about just falling into this marketing of zero calories, no fat, no sugar types of messages.
Many of the food labels at the grocery store are very deceptive. For example, there's a cereal made by General Mills called Total Blueberry Pomegranate Cereal. It contains no blueberries and no pomegranates. So you might wonder, well, how did they come up with a name? And the naming of food products often is a little too loose and creative. It's almost as if they're naming these products, and this is from the major food companies whose products are in every major grocery store all around the world. It's almost as if they're naming them based on what they hope you might imagine you're eating rather than what's really in the box, because a lot of times it's not in there. And then there's stuff that is in there that they don't want you to see on the label, so they don't put it on the label, such as propylene glycol. This chemical is used in a lot of blueberry muffins. It's part of what makes up the blueberry bits that aren't blueberries. They're made of propylene glycol, partially hydrogenated oils, liquid sugars, and artificial colors. You can also use propylene glycol to winterize your RV. It prevents the pipes from freezing in the winter. It's also used to clean out your colon before a colonoscopy. So multiple uses for this ingredient that you get in your blueberry muffins.
America loves enemies. And America chooses an enemy and deploys all its forces against it, right? So at some point, when we were noticing that we were getting fat as a population, we attacked, we made the enemy was fat. And everything became fat-free. Fat-free this and fat-free that. And the calories that fat were occupying were replaced by mostly carbohydrates. That resulted in the fattest country in the world.
Fat-free normally means it's loaded with sugar. I can get a 2-pound bag of sugar in my hand now, and I can put a label that says 100% fat-free. The fact that once the sugar is ingested, will turn into fat in the body. Because why? Because it sends the sugar levels sky high. And what does the pancreas do? It has to secrete insulin in order to bring that down so you don't die. Insulin is the fat-producing hormone. So the 2-pound bag of sugar that I put 100% fat-free, although factually correct, is unbelievably misleading. So all this excess energy comes along and says, where can we store it? Short-term places, liver. But what do we do with the excess? I know what we'll do. We'll produce some fat cells, store them in there, use them later. Problem is, there's never a later.
Fat is really good for you if it's the right kind of fat. And that's the key. It's getting the right kind of fat into your body.
If you're on a low-fat diet of some kind, you are constantly hungry. Why? Because you need the correct fats and proteins to feel satiated. And so therefore, if you negate that side of what the body is crying out for, you're constantly looking for it.
We know that the cheap, low-grade fats, such as soybean oil and even canola oil and the corn oils, these are not healthy for you to consume in large quantities over the long term. The worst kinds of fats are the partially hydrogenated fats. These are the hydrogenated oils that are used in many baked items and crackers and cookies and margarine spreads, you know, the butter spreads. Oh, those are some of the worst foods you could possibly eat. If you want healthy fats, then you got to get into the natural plant-based fats from avocados and chia seeds and flax seeds and even a healthy fat from salmon, wild-caught salmon. That's a healthy fat for you.
You want a bite?
I thought you loved me.
I do. Take 2 bites.
It's got high fructose corn syrup in it.
So?
Well, you know what they say about it.
What?
That...
When it comes to high fructose corn syrup, a lot of people don't realize the dangers of refining and concentrating ingredients from a product.
In the 70s, Japanese scientists developed a technology to separate fructose from corn, thus radically reducing the cost of this high fructose corn syrup relative to traditional forms of sugar.
So high fructose corn syrup comes from corn, obviously. But it's not natural because it's so concentrated and so refined. It's an isolated nutrient. For example, you know, cocaine is probably not good for your health, but it comes from the coca leaf. And coca leaf tea is perfectly safe for your health. I drank it when I was hiking in the Andes Mountains, and it's used throughout the culture there. It's a very important nutraceutical, medicinal plant that's used throughout South America. And there's no harm in drinking coca tea, and it's not addictive, nothing like that. But you wouldn't want to snort cocaine from the highly refined coca tea. Well, eating high fructose corn syrup, in my view, is a lot like snorting cocaine. It is the highly refined, isolated, concentrated, chemically manipulated version of something that's found in corn and grown in corn.
It's very similar to what white sugar is. White sugar is the purified sucrose extracted out of, say, beets or sugarcane. It's a pharmaceutical sugar. Well, white flour is a pharmaceutical carbohydrate in the same way that cocaine is extracted out of the coca plant. So you have the native cocaine in the matrix of the plant itself, or you have the pharmaceutical version. To me, white sugar, cocaine, white flour, they all fall in the same category of a whitened, extracted, purified substance that's drawn out of the plant kingdom. All of them create imbalances in the body and lead to all kind of host of problems.
But if you eat corn, it's fine. You're not going to get that much high fructose corn syrup.
The number one source of calories in the United States is fructose, and fructose is highly addictive. In the 1900s, the average person was exposed to about 15 grams of fructose. And the fructose is another term for that. It's fruit sugar. And, of course, it's why fruit, most fruits are sweet. And fructose in small amounts, 15, 25 grams, which is less than an ounce a day, is probably okay and healthy. But in the average person is consuming 70 to 80 grams a day. And there are many kids, primarily teenagers, who are taking 120, 150 grams of fructose a day, literally 10 times the amount they were taking a century ago. So when you abuse that type of sugar and you have that exposure, it has very severe metabolic consequences that can lead to these addictive processes and change brain chemistry and really make it very difficult to get out of this cycle where you have these food cravings and really addicted to food that's not going to make you healthy.
And in terms of just the glycemic index, high fructose corn syrup is like jet fuel for your body. You know, if you pour jet fuel into your car, into your car's gasoline tank, you're going to ruin your engine and burn it out. Much the same thing happens in the human body. You can find high fructose corn syrup in so many products in the stores, it would amaze you. If you turned them around and looked at the ingredients, no way, I can't believe it's in here. Salad dressings will have it. You'll have high fructose corn syrup in like pasta sauces, and pizza sauce especially is loaded with it. You really have to watch out for everything in the grocery store. Read it, make sure it doesn't contain this high fructose corn syrup and other ingredients that are dangerous. Stay away from the isolates. Stay away from high fructose corn syrup. Stay away from anything that is an unnatural and highly concentrated chemical from a plant that should be consumed in its full spectrum bioavailable nutrient complexity. That's the way nature delivers food, as a nutrient complex, not as one isolated nutrient. One of the most important realizations that people need to get onto here is when they're eating is that the bread and any of these fluffy carbohydrates, they're converted into sugar right in your body. So within minutes after you eat them, they become sugar. So a lot of people say, well, I'm avoiding sugar because they're not eating crystallized sugar in that form or drinking liquid sugar, but they're eating a bread or they're eating a pancake or a muffin or a cornbread. Cornbread used to be made out of corn and not sugar. Now it's like corn cake. It's sugarized corn cake. And when you eat that, that becomes sugar internally. It has a very high glycemic index and a high glycemic load.
I'm just going to lunch.
What to eat, if you're working to reduce your sugars, your definition of what is sugar really needs to expand. It's more than just the white powder.
It's bread, pasta, cereal,
rice, potatoes, corn, waffles, pancakes, you know, pretty much
any food for breakfast that most people eat.
In America, we're eating about 150 pounds of sugar per year, each person. 79 pounds of high fructose corn syrup. That's about 22 teaspoons of sugar a day. Okay, so there's nothing moderate about that. Sugar is in everything, and everything from cough syrup to crackers to sushi. I mean, it's very hard to avoid. The more sugar that we're consuming, the more the increase of chronic disease we're experiencing, and also these incredible ups and downs and mood swings.
Because what sugar does is it increases beta endorphin in the brain, and that's a feel-good natural opiate, morphine-like substance. And so when you're depressed or you're under stress, you want to eat, what do we call them? Comfort food, macaroni and cheese, all the foods that have a virtual delivery system of sugar right into body fat. So it is not fat that makes you fat. It's sugar that makes you fat. And It is very easy and cheap to produce food that becomes sugar quickly.
You think of something like a croissant. Many people I know that just say, you know, I've gone on a sugar-free diet. And I say, I'm eating a croissant. And I say, that sugar, what do you think is going to happen? As soon as it enters the bloodstream, that is sugar.
What we're really talking about is getting that hit, getting that sugar high, getting that beta endorphin rush that people are looking for to soothe themselves when they are under stress. But once you understand that sugar is a drug, just like alcohol is a drug, and so what happens with any addiction is this: you become habituated to the effect, and therefore you need more and more and more over time to give you the same effect. It's no different than it is with sugar.
We know the problems caused by something like cocaine, purified cocaine. We know that causes problems. We're comfortable with referring to that as a drug. We're becoming culturally more comfortable with recognizing white sugar as a drug. I think people are starting to understand how addictive a substance it is.
Now, if you walk the aisles in the average grocery store and you look at the amount of sugar in a child's breakfast cereal, you might as well be rolling up the kid's sleeve and putting in heroin, because it's the same.
Milk ain't good enough anymore, because someone at the milk board, right, and don't get me wrong, I support milk, but someone at the milk board probably paid a lot of money for some geezer to work out that if you put loads of flavourings and colourings and sugar in milk, right, more kids will drink it. For me, there ain't no need to flavour the milk, okay? There's sugar in everything. I know the ins and outs of those ingredients. It's in everything. Even the milk hasn't escaped the kind of modern-day problems. There's our milk, there's our carton. In that is nearly as much sugar as one of your favourite cans of fizzy pop, and they're having two a day. So, let me just show you. We've got one kid here having, you know, 8 tablespoons of sugar a day, you know? There's your week, there's your month, and I've took the liberty of putting in just the 5 years of elementary school sugar, just from milk. Now, I don't know about you guys, but judging the circumstances, right, any judge in the whole world would look at the statistics and the evidence, and they would find any government of old guilty of child abuse. That's my belief.
The challenge we have with food, or in particular sugar, is because it's illegal to give a child a cigarette, and so it should be. It is illegal to give a child alcohol. It's not illegal to give a child white refined sugar or refined fat. Food, as far as I'm concerned, kills more people than all drugs on earth combined. And again, to go back to the beginning, people know this, so why are highly intelligent people not stopping? Because they don't know the nature of the trap.
I used to be so addicted to sugar that I would literally throw my food out and dig through the garbage. So I'd go get, you know, ice cream and Ben and Jerry's and donuts, and I'd have a pig out fast. And I would have to throw my food in the garbage, and then I got to the point where I would dig through the garbage and get the sugar. And then I got to a point where the only way I wouldn't dig through the garbage was to spray it with Windex. So you tell me that that's healthy and in balance.
No, we think about, ooh, cocaine, heroin, all these big drugs, but the truth is that premature death is coming from sugar and alcohol and smoking, of course. So if you begin to think about these massive doses of sugar as no different from drugs and alcohol, then you get a handle on the situation.
Hey, everyone, welcome back. Now, I'd like to introduce you to a special guest I have with me in the studio, Harvey Diamond, health guru and the author of Fit for Life. Harvey is here to talk to us about something he is very passionate about, dieting. Harvey, tell us what you think about diets.
So many people want to know about diets because people are going to try them, but they don't work. The first chapter of the first book that I ever wrote was called Diets Don't Work, because they're temporary. What they're doing is taking one of the food categories that we must have to live, that's protein, fat, carbohydrate, and one of those is eliminated. And if you do that, some weight will be lost temporarily. Well, let me ask you something. Do you want to be healthy temporarily? No, but you want to lose weight temporarily. they have failure built right into them. There was a study done at UCLA once that said 90 to 95% of the people who go on a diet will not only gain that weight back, they will add more weight because they're so happy to be eating again that they don't eat intelligently.
Like borrowing from Peter to pay Paul. I mean, you can get 10 pounds off your body through sheer force, but you're going to have to pay back with interest. You'll pay back with 15 pounds because your body, every time you force yourself to lose weight, your body's going to want to have extra weight to protect you from a perceived famine. And I lived through this where I lose 10 pounds, gain 15, lose 10 pounds, gain 15, until I had gained over 200 pounds. And when I say I tried every diet, besides meeting face-to-face with Atkins, going to Pritikin, I had naturopaths, homeopaths, acupuncture. I had these seeds taped to my ear from an acupuncturist. And there's supposed to be, it's like an acupressure point. So every time you're hungry, you're supposed to press it. I'd walk through the streets of New York. Every time I'd smell pizza, I'd sit there and like press these seeds in my ear. This is what I lived with. And I really did work at it. You know, people think that overweight people are just weak and lazy and overindulgent. I'm a very disciplined person, but I could not, when my body wanted to be fat, I could not lose the weight.
I think we're barking up the wrong tree. You know, people are looking for a result that is superficial. They're looking just to look good. And they don't really consider that that could be done from the inside out, right? So people go into diets and all these fads in order to lose weight and lose weight fast. And that is just not the way to approach it. The results prove it.
You know, we're violating our body's basic survival laws over and over and over again. The whole dieting paradigm is flawed. And every diet comes out. Every week there's a new diet based on the same idea that you can somehow force yourself to lose weight. And it's flawed. It's based on a fundamental flaw that every time you force yourself to lose weight, your body will force you to gain weight.
So I think what happens is we set ourselves up for failure because, yes, you can manipulate the ratios of calories. You can manipulate the ratio of fat to protein to carbohydrate infinitely. We keep seeing all these variations. So I remember the high carbohydrate, low fat. And then it switched to, well, let's go high protein, low carbohydrate. And then it switched to high fat, moderate carbohydrate. It just keeps switching around. And all of these things have an effect because what you're doing is restricting calories from people. Or you're manipulating the way their metabolism works.
And that's why the Atkins diet was so miserable for me because I was so addicted to carbs. You know, to what I call now dead food. I was so addicted to that. To try to go off that, at the end of the day, it was just miserable. And what I used to do is I used to swap diets because, the Atkins diet is zero carbs, and then the Pritikin diet is all carbs. You know, so my wife used to joke with me that I was on the Atkins diet during the day and the Pritikin diet at night because I'd come home at the end of the day and I just couldn't take going a whole day without carbs. But you know, I had to have bread.
The definition of a diet is the foods that an organism habitually eats to sustain itself. So what we're talking about is a real diet in the sense of what a species eats. When we get onto our real diet, we don't have to think about these things anymore. But if we're going to eat from that suite of foods that exists in the supermarket, we're going to constantly have problems. We're going to constantly have to monitor ourselves because these foods make you fat. So if we look around the world, we see human beings have been able to inhabit the whole globe. And they've been able to do it on a host of different foods, from the extreme Arctic where people ate almost exclusively animal fat and muscle and organ meats to the jungle where people had access to far more fruits and far more plant material. We see people thriving and people staying lean and healthy and avoiding degenerative disease and not putting on all that extra weight almost no matter what they eat. Now, we are eating a diet that no longer resembles that. So it's kind of like if we lived in a zoo. If you put a human being in a zoo, the way you put a chimpanzee in a zoo, well, the question would be, what do we feed that human in the zoo? well, we don't feed chimpanzees in zoos Captain Crunch cereal, Twinkies, and donuts. We feed them a diet that looks like the diet they eat in their ecosystem. We sort of live in a zoo-like environment now. We live in this artificial environment. And unfortunately, we're not feeding ourselves the foods we're biologically adapted to.
If you cut down on any food, regardless of what the food is, if you say, right, as from Monday, so it was a Monday, everyone's always going on a diet on a Monday, they tend to consume enormous amounts of food from Friday to the Sunday. Sunday, they tend to go shopping, and they put in stuff that they wouldn't already have ever put in, fruits and vegetables, as an example. Even it's funny, because I've been on a million diets, and in the past, when I went on those diets and I was overweight myself, I would arrive at the checkout. On the day before my diet would begin, I have so much healthy stuff, I'd be so proud of my trolley. And I'd want the checkout person to say something. Look, this isn't ordinary. Look at how much fruit and veg I've got. I would then start on the Monday morning, and I would immediately start to feel deprived. Now, think about this. I could have gone sometimes till 2 o'clock in the afternoon, not even thinking about food, when I wasn't on a diet, without consuming any food sometimes. I grab some water or sometimes nothing. I hadn't thought about it. But the very second I told my brain that I was on a diet, I went into the mode of can't. If you go through, I want that, but I can't have it, to I can have it, but I don't want it, there's a massive paradigm shift.
Don't turn it into a diet. Keep the focus always on adding. If it's, for example, the types of foods we need are foods that were not man-made, because man-made foods our body doesn't know how to process, doesn't know how to digest, and it causes hormonal chaos that causes us to gain weight.
The best strategy we've got is to just add in the good stuff. Eventually, it's going to crowd out the bad stuff, and that works for everybody. It makes everything so simple. It completely deactivates all the mental neuroses we have about diets and what we have to eat and all that kind of stuff. Let's just add in the cucumbers. Let's add in the apples. The simple foods, the plant foods, the fruits, the nuts, the seeds, the vegetables, the animal foods of high quality. Start looking at the foods in your house and asking yourself, could I replace this food with a well-grown local option that's not as processed? For instance, if you're used to making pancakes out of white flour, can you go to a farm locally that produces flour and stone grinds it? Can you find that? If you look in your fridge and you've got milk in there and you know it's processed milk and it's got the growth hormone in it, you know it's pesticide laden and you know there's pus in it, can you find a farm locally that can produce that food for you the way people used to get it? If you've got, you know, the bananas in your house from the supermarket, can you replace them with an organic option? Can you move in a direction that brings you towards the reapproximation of your natural diet? Can you do that? You start adding that in, all of a sudden all those other choices start moving away. Inevitably, you're going to feel so much better eating the good stuff that the choice for the bad stuff is no longer valid.
I had very bad sleep apnea. I was borderline type 2 diabetic, elevated triglycerides and cholesterol. I'd worked with Dr. Atkins, the late Dr. Atkins, face-to-face in New York, and in the end, the best he could do was yell at me for being so fat and because I was killing myself. He goes, what are you doing? You're killing yourself. And I thought to myself, you know, you sold 200 million copies of your book. The best, you think I'm going to lose weight because you're mad at me? Is that really the best you can do? So I was over 400 pounds. And after I made that, so I had that sort of epiphany and changed my focus from diet to finding the real reasons why my body wanted to be fat, I then went on to lose over 200 pounds. I lost about 220 pounds over a 2.5 year period. And that was 7 years ago.
I just felt that life was passing me by. Life was just not fun, you know?
know? The only fun I had was watching people on TV having fun.
It's a very dispiriting thing. You wake up in the morning and I was immediately aware of my body. And I was immediately aware I didn't like it.
It felt a little bit like, you know, like being wrapped in a blanket with three holes in it, okay? Two to watch television and one to eat. And that's it.
I got to this point where I was 40 years of age. I was fat, sick, and nearly dead. I was 310 pounds or 141 kilos. I was taking high doses of steroids every day, day and night, for 8 years. I was a cheeseburger away from a heart attack, and I said, no more. Got to do something about this, Joe. You're not as smart as you thought you were. What actually happened after that period of time was that my body gave up. It gave up to the pressure of what I was putting it under. And when I talk about the pressure I was putting under, it was like lack of sleep, poor diet, too much alcohol, smoking, no exercise. I mean, you know, you throw everything in, I had it all.
Now, a lot of us, we have some healing to do. We have recovery to do because the world we grew up in has been such a barrage against our nervous system, our endocrine system. Our health has been under attack. So sometimes there's going to be a period of healing.
We decided as a race to experiment with chemicals. We created over 75,000 synthetic chemicals since 1940. We've released them wholesale into the environment. They're in the food chain. They're in us. They've contaminated every single creature on Earth. We now have to clean up. Now we have to actually turn it around and decide that we're going to move away from better living through chemistry and move towards the idea of better living through working with nature and natural laws.
And the body has two ways of defending itself, which are generic ways. One of them is the body produces mucus to coat these chemicals so that they buffer the irritation, or it retains and even generates more fat. Because as we said, most of these chemicals are lipophilic or fat-loving. They don't dissolve in water, they dissolve in fat. So they attach to fat. Now, if you just sweat it off and force the body into burning fat without creating the conditions for the body to be able to cleanse and detoxify and neutralize and make these chemicals water-soluble so that it can be sweated off and peed off. So you're burning fat but not really getting rid of the toxins. These toxins are left to cause the damage that they were not causing because they were surrounded by fat.
So as long as you're taking in more toxins than you're eliminating, your body's not going to let you burn fat, because burning the fat will just put more toxins into your body. So you have to address the fact that you're being assaulted with toxins before your body will allow you to let go of weight.
The body only wants to heal. It's crying out to heal. That's what it wants to do. It wants to naturally detoxify. Only the body can detoxify itself, providing there's no toxicity coming in.
Probably the best thing a person can do in the beginning is kind of clean themselves out, get on a detoxification program. Foods that detoxify the body, some are really obvious and some are not. Some of the more obvious ones are green vegetables, chlorophyll-rich foods. In hospitals, you know, chlorophyll is used or was used as an internal deodorant for people who had a lot of body odor. Chlorophyll is a great way to clean our bodies out. So those are, of course, all of our well-grown heirloom organic vegetables. These are fantastic for cleaning our bodies out. There's some less obvious stuff as well, though, like gelatinous plant foods. For instance, things like chia seeds or aloe vera or the seaweeds. These foods that have a gel that they secrete when they get wet. And what those do, those gels move through our intestinal tract. If we eat something like chia seeds, if we can blend that into a drink some way or something like that and get it into our bodies, these gelatinous fibers move through our intestinal tract, absorbing things, binding them, and passing them through. Particularly what they do is they absorb the bile salts that are released by the liver, bind those up and pass those out, and with it, all the fat-soluble toxins the liver's trying to get rid of. Now, if we don't have have these gelatinous fibers, we tend to reabsorb a lot of that. So the liver tries to get rid of something, puts it in the bile, dumps it into the small intestine, hoping that it eventually gets out of us, but it gets reabsorbed. So gelatinous fibers can really do a lot to clean out the liver.
I want to mention two other ingredients that are especially useful for detox, and that is parsley and cilantro. Now, parsley cleanses your entire blood supply, and it also gives you fresh breath. Parsley has so much chlorophyll that it just cleanses your whole system. And cilantro binds with heavy metals. And a lot of people are getting mercury, especially through the fish that they're eating or through their dental fillings. And if you eat cilantro, it can bind with that and remove it from your system so that the mercury doesn't get lodged in your body's cells. And mercury, as you know, is very toxic. It's a neurotoxin. You don't want that anywhere in your brain cells, right?
But cleansing our bodies is not complicated. It's not difficult. It's just going to require high-quality green plant food. It's going to require gelatinous fibers. It's going to require good water. It's going to mean needing good air. It's going to mean getting sunlight. And our body wants to cleanse itself. It's looking to cleanse itself. It knows how to cleanse itself. You don't even have to really do very much. Just input gentle foods, be out in nature, your body will cleanse itself very easily. And when the weight starts coming off, people become so excited, they don't want to stop. And then eventually, starting to add more and more foods back in from healthy sources that look like the foods they used to eat, but are actually more satisfying and more nutritive. And they'll find that they can live a life of not just being fit and trim, but actually feeling how they've always wanted to feel in a body that works properly and that stays healthy forever.
For me, it's back to nature and it's back to the garden, right? And if it's made in the garden, then I eat it. If it's made in a lab, it takes a lab to digest. If it has a shelf life longer than me, I don't eat it. It's just common sense. The simpler I get, the healthier I get.
So as you seek to improve your health, you're going to want to include certain types of foods, classes of foods that are typically ignored in the American culture. Now, this is not controversial. The most conservative nutritionists will recommend that we need 6 to 8 servings of fruits and vegetables, I say, but I always like to twist that around. It should be vegetables and fruits, because vegetables are really the most beneficial food group that we can have access to, and most people are not getting enough. They just aren't. I mean, you need a lot of good vegetables, because they're full of the full range of phytonutrients and antioxidants and everything that you need to stay healthy. Now, one of the ways that I cheat this, because, you know, I've been getting vegetables is a challenge, is that I do vegetable juicing. So I'll typically, you know, buy, I don't know, 20 pounds of vegetables a week, maybe more, and juice a few pounds a day, essentially a quart of dark green vegetable juice that consists of, as a base, I like celery and cucumbers as a base, and then I add the dark, deep green leafy vegetables, like kale or collards, and there's a number of different types of kale. Those are the two big ones, but then you can also use other dark green vegetables.
Juicing is important for two main reasons. People often say to me, well, why don't we just eat it? That's a good question, first of all. Why don't we just eat it? We don't. That's the first thing to address. The point is that most people don't consume enough raw fruits and vegetables in a spectrum of colors. That's the number one. Secondly, most people are overfed and they're undernourished. And their digestive system is beaten up over years and years and years of trying to digest, extract the nutrients, and dispose of the waste of the wrong kind of foods. Juicing is important as well because it's easy to absorb. It's the ultimate fast food. People say, I want a fast food diet. Get juicing. Because, you know, if you think the average dinner will take anything from 4 to 16 hours to leave the stomach and the body try and digest it, freshly extracted juice is a 15-minute nutrient express to health. That's what it is. It goes into your stomach, goes 15 minutes into your cells. And also, let's be fair, you will consume far more raw, fresh vegetables, kind of vegetables you wouldn't ordinarily eat. Juice mixed with a little bit of apple, a little bit of pineapple, a little bit of lime. You can jazz up some of these juices so they taste divine. So can you imagine, you remove refined sugars, refined fats, junky type foods, all the wheat, the bread, the man-made foods going into your body, and all of a sudden, overnight, you replace it with high water content. That's what it is. Pure high water content, organic, rich, mineral, vitamin-rich fuel going into every single cell of your body in the most easy to digest and absorb form, and with a spectrum of colors, with everything the body requires. What do you think the body's going to do? It's not going to reject this at all. It's going to look and say, now I'm on board. Now you're good to me, let me shine for you.
20 years ago, this is what I saw when I looked in the mirror. Looking good. Well, the years rolled by, and I kept seeing that same fit-looking bloke looking back at me. Who was I kidding? I didn't look like that anymore. I looked like I've swallowed a sheep. So then I started to switch to alternative paths, and I tried everything. I did witch doctors, I did mud baths, I did, you know, acupuncture. I did the lot. The one thing which I was really afraid to face up to was changing what I put into my mouth.
I've never heard of a raw food restaurant. Raw food? How do you cook raw food?
Look at that breakfast.
This looks like it should be mowed.
It actually was mowed, and then it turned into that.
I didn't know anything about vegetarians. I knew Gandhi was a vegetarian. And vegan, I thought vegan was a planet. You know, I had no idea of that world.
So I decided to experiment. It was, you know, I was fighting for life here. What if it works? Yeah. So I went to the farmer's market, got a lot of veggies, beets and kale and all sorts of things. It all didn't look attractive to me because there was no dessert there. And then I cleansed for 3 days, just juicing and detoxifying my body.
I guess the way I look at it was that I turned my back on Mother Nature. And I wanted to conduct an experiment where I was the lab rat. Was what would happen if I ran towards her, full steam? Would she open her arms and embrace me, and would I be healed? I went straight to juicing and a plant-based diet, and within basically 10 to 15 days, the fog had lifted, and I was on the path.
After about 2 weeks, I did notice my energy coming back, and colors just a little bit brighter.
Just after 3 days of cleanse, I lost 7 pounds. After 4 months of continuing healthy diet, I was cancer-free. My skin cleared. It was first time ever that I lost weight naturally so fast.
The end of the day, you know, this is kind of like your last area of control in the world. What you do with this, what you take and what you put in here, nobody can control you on.
As a side effect, will make you lose weight, will make your eyes white, will make your skin glow. There's no need to think about that, right? Those are side effects of cleansing and detoxification.
Whatever you're going for, I think that you can ultimately get it when you start to change your diet and lifestyle. A lot of people look at me and they're like, you must be in your 20s. Well, no, I'm not. And that's always a nice compliment. I love hearing that people think I'm a lot younger than I am and, you know, headed into my 40s. And certainly I think that this lifestyle has helped me not only live with a chronic disease, but also feel young, be young in my skin, and, you know, depending on the lighting, look pretty good too.
The truth is that we're programmed as a species to be attracted to the people who look good. Why? Because they're the healthiest ones.
We are naturally designed to screen each other for health, for reproductive purposes. We look at each other and we see glowing skin, we see shining eyes, and that's sexy to us, a confident person sexy to us.
Unconsciously, people look for symmetry. They look for skin tone and a steady skin tone and not a lot of splotchy type of colors on your skin. Why? Why is this built into our definition of beauty? Why does the beauty industry spend so much time trying to create products that they put on your skin to make your skin look artificially monotone? Well, the answer is because those are the cues that we pick up on. It makes you look younger or sexier.
Ultimately, that to me is what we're striving for, is a deep richness of skin tone, a deep richness of hair, a luster in our nails, an overall feeling of shine and glow, and even almost an aura. This is possible through natural foods, and this is possible through certain strategies of using natural foods and certain supplements.
Through juicing especially, and by avoiding fried foods and avoiding the highly oxidative foods that destroy your skin and destroy your internal organs. Fried foods are the worst, in my opinion, and barbecued foods. I mean, they're highly toxic, loaded with carcinogenic chemicals. If you can avoid those, or at least greatly reduce those and increase your intake of superfoods, chlorella and spirulina, fresh juice from vegetables and fruits, you know, that you make in your own kitchen, then your skin, within 30 days, it will turn around completely. Your friends will ask you, what's your secret? And when you tell them, I've been juicing fresh produce, they'll say, well, I'm just going to buy a skin cream because they want the easier way. But if you have good friends, they might start juicing with you. Because your juice beats their skin cream.
See, the skin is a true symbol of our health because it's the last place to get nutrition. And if you can drive all those nutrients all the way through to the skin, then you know it's gotten everywhere else too. And that's something that we all recognize. If somebody's got beautiful skin, it tells us and invites us to a deeper understanding about what's going on inside their body. We know that they're generally having healthier liver, kidneys, heart, lungs, etc.
So let's take vanity. It's a very good entryway because your skin looks better when you're eating a diet that is low glycemic, where the blood sugar is stable. As a matter of fact, that's one of the first things that happens. Your skin, your hair, your nails begin to look better. One of the reasons that I personally stopped eating so many grains and high glycemic foods is over the years I noticed a couple things. First of all, there was weight gain every year, a little more, and every year harder and harder to keep off. Second, me and my patients all started to have fingernails that broke, hair that broke, and skin that was getting all red and broken blood vessels and all of that stuff. When you eat well, that goes away.
We can only eat so much in a day. Therefore, the idea of eating for beauty is, let's make those foods beauty foods, like olive oil and olives, cucumbers, radishes, hemp seeds, aloe vera, coconut products, properly fermented food. I'm talking about yogurt. I'm talking about kimchi. I'm talking about sauerkraut. We use those foods to help us digest and to replenish the bacteria that colonizes our intestinal tract. Let's focus on the beauty minerals like silica and iron and manganese that give glow and charisma. Sulfur and what it does to our connective tissue and how it reverses age-related lines and how it fills out our protein makeup so that our musculature and our overall build reflects the higher qualities, almost the symbolical qualities that beauty points to. The cosmetic industry seems to be a wholesale dumping ground for just about every single type of chemical that exists, from lead compounds, mercury compounds, compounds that are made from horse urine, namely urea. There are all different kinds of synthetic compounds that make it into the cosmetic industry, like sodium lauryl sulfate and other sudsing agents that are used in detergents, that are used in shampoos and body lotion, all this kind of stuff.
The skin creams that you buy are almost all loaded with toxic chemicals. I mean, most of them contain fragrance chemicals. We did a lab analysis of a popular perfume product and it showed that it contains 21 different toxic, potentially carcinogenic chemicals, none of which are listed on the label. So if you think about it, how do you want healthy skin? Do you want your skin to be treated with nutrition from the inside out? Or do you want to coat it with petrochemicals and toxic chemicals and artificial fragrance products from the outside, which will be absorbed in? And then they will get into your liver and your heart and your kidneys and your brain, and they will cause disease inside.
it's not just what you're eating, it's also what's eating you. So where is the sweetness missing in your life? What else is going on? What kind of suffering are you going through? What's going on between this year and this year?
There's an interesting study called the ACE study, the Adverse Childhood Experiences study, done by Vincent Felitti at Kaiser Permanente in San Diego. And they were working with obese people. And what he's come to the conclusion of is that obesity is not the problem, it's a solution. So let's take a look at that. It's a solution to chronic stress. It's a solution in many people to sexual abuse, dysfunctional family situation, and so on.
You know, I've talked to so many people that have been overweight all their life, and I always ask them, when did it start? When I was 4 years old. What happened when you were 4 years old? Well, my father was an alcoholic and he beat me. Or we moved to another country and I was really scared.
Let's look at where you're not satisfied. Are you in a dead-end job? Are you married to somebody who treats you like crap? Are you suffocating under the weight of too much pressure in your life? Are there some old residual traumas and dramas that need to be attended to? Some unfinished business that's getting you stuck and making you keep spinning your wheels that'll ultimately encourage you to make poor food choices? Dear diary, today I feel very sad and I want to eat everything, right? I think a lot of people, when they're stressed or sad, they turn to food for comfort, especially old foods that they ate growing up. You know, meatloaf, mashed potatoes, cake, cookies, all those things that you ate or you got from your mom. And, you know, it goes back to that time of being nurtured and nourished and whatnot. One of the best pieces of advice I ever got from a spiritual teacher was, if you're upset, don't eat. And I think it's so profound because oftentimes when we're upset, we have no connection to whether or not we're satiated or not, whether or not we're full. Because we're trying to fill a void that can never be filled with food.
So the type of stresses are like nothing that you would ever associate necessarily with weight gain. Sleep deprivation, dehydration, mental and emotional stress. You're driving to work, you're stuck in traffic, your boss is going to get mad at you. That's causing chemistry. Every time you have a mental or emotional stress, it's causing chemistry in your body, real chemistry. And when that chemistry is the same chemistry as a famine, your body's going to want to get away. It's trying to protect you from the stresses in your life. It doesn't know what to do. We're living in a world where it's so different from the way it was thousands of years ago, where all we had to worry about was not being eaten by a tiger and where our next meal was coming from. And now we got to worry about where our mortgage, how we're going to pay our mortgage or our credit card, or if our kid's going to go to school, or if the world's going to get blown up. And all of these stresses are causing chemistry, and our bodies are trying to protect us. And people get so mad. We get so mad at our bodies. Like, you know, we hate our bodies because we think that our body's trying to sabotage us, so we're out to get us. No, it's a protection mechanism. It's nothing more.
When you're under stress, you have the stress hormones, cortisol and epinephrine. And if you've ever seen anyone on steroid medication such as prednisone, you see that the first thing that happens is they gain 20 to 30 pounds no matter what they're eating. In fact, when your cortisol, stress hormone levels are high enough, they've documented the fact that looking at a donut actually changes your metabolism. The number one best way to digest stress hormones is sleep. And deep sleep will metabolize excess cortisol and epinephrine better than anything else. So I want people to try something. If you've been under stress and you sleep for only 3 to 4 hours a night, you will gain 2 pounds just from that alone, because the stress increases fluid retention. So I call those liquid pounds. You want to take care of those liquid pounds before they turn into real pounds, which they inevitably will. Many, many people are sleep deprived now. So I'd first like to give people permission to sleep, and sleep as long as you need to whenever you can. So that's sleep. The second thing that really metabolizes stress hormones, and this is how the body was designed, is exercise. When you lift weights or you simply take a long walk, you're doing a couple things. One is you're increasing those feel-good hormones that you've normally gone to sugar for. So exercise, taking a walk 3-4 times a week, is as good as antidepressants for mild to moderate depression. I mean, this is insane. You just exercise alone, and you know when you get out there and you do it and you're in the fresh air and so on, you feel much better. And that's biochemical. Anything that is sustainably pleasurable will decrease stress hormones. Laughter decreases them enormously. So I would recommend that you have some funny movies lying around, and that's been clinically shown to improve immunity and also decrease pain.
A lot of people look at my before and after pictures and they wonder, you know, how I did that. I can tell you that the body that I have now is exactly the body that I visualized having. And I'm not sure that's a coincidence. And I thought about, why is visualization so powerful for weight loss and visualization for body changing in general? Because, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger said he used to use visualization to become a professional, a champion bodybuilder, and he was one of the best bodybuilders. And I've talked to so many other people that have been so successful with visualization, but what I've realized is visualization is like a language that you can use to talk to your subconscious. Your subconscious is the part of your brain that's in charge of a lot of things, but one of the things it's in charge of is your body's unconscious processes. How much oxygen you need is not a conscious thought. You don't think how much, you know, I should breathe more. That's unconscious. How much your heart beats is unconscious. And how fat or thin you should be is an unconscious decision, but it is a decision. And the problem with this subconscious or unconscious part of us is that it doesn't speak English. And so we're being run by a brain that we can't talk to. But what I realize is visualization is like a language that you can use to talk to your unconscious. Because just like you can't talk to someone who doesn't speak your language, say you have to go to the bathroom in a foreign country, you could ask 1,000 people where the bathroom is, they won't tell you. But if you draw a picture of the bathroom on a napkin in the restaurant or something and show it to anyone instantly, they know what you mean. Visualization is the universal, or symbols is the universal language for people that don't speak your language and your body doesn't speak your language. When you make a visual image of the way you'd like to look, it could be you at another time when you were fit and healthy and happy, or it could be somebody else. It doesn't matter. Just look at the picture for 30 seconds with kind of like, if you're looking through the picture in an unconscious way, don't look at the picture with the eyes, look through it. Let your subconscious absorb it for just 30 seconds. And then close your eyes and either see yourself, feel yourself, imagine yourself being in that body. Imagine yourself walking on the beach with that body. Whatever way you can do it. And you do it when your mind is calm and powerful and relaxed. Your subconscious understands, and it understands that it doesn't need fat, and that it's confusing the stresses, because it really doesn't know what to do with the stresses of modern day life. Do I get fatter? Do I get thinner? How do I protect this person who's so scared? So sometimes it uses fat, but when you can communicate with your subconscious and say, no, that's not the answer. I appreciate it, but that's not what's happening. Then, okay, I'll turn the fat programs off. Just like that, everything changes.
Unfortunately, most people, and when I say most, that's like over 50% of people, get out of that morning shower, have a look at themselves in the mirror when they're alone, and they're not happy with what they see. They're just not happy. And they start out their day by berating themselves and telling them they're a loser and that they're no good and they've got to lift their game and all these things. Now, if you had someone who was with you 24/7 that was just whispering that in your ear all the time, I mean, I don't know about you, but they wouldn't last 5 minutes with me. Yet, we allow ourselves to do it to ourselves. Like, we do it to ourselves.
There's a group that I go to that says, let us love you till you love yourself. And when I first heard that, it's like, I was so sad. I became aware of the death of my self-loathing. Death seemed at least, you know, I wasn't suicidal. I occasionally had bouts and thoughts, but it was like, it wasn't suicidal, but I welcomed death. So, you know what, like, just turn the switch, you know, like, flip the off button, you know, I'm ready for the big sleep, man. And it's at that point that the genesis of willingness emerges. That's the genesis of willingness. And that crack, as Leonard Cohen, it says, you know, it's the cracks that lets the light in. That crack let the light in.
So something miraculous, something powerful happens when you take care of yourself. You realize that you realize you're precious. You realize that you're like, you know, you become in love with yourself, basically. And it shines, it overflows to others, it becomes contagious. You give others the permission to be in love with themselves and in love with life.
What was the most important thing to keep off the weight? What do I believe was the most crucial component? Without question, love. Love for myself and love for other people.
And when you think about love, what love is really, is love is safety. Because when you're 0 years old, when you're a couple of weeks old, if your mother doesn't love you, you're going to die. Your mother has to take care of you, has to feed you. You are totally helpless. So from the moment we're born, we equate love with safety. So when you feel like you're not being loved because your partner or boyfriend or girlfriend doesn't love you, or because someone out there doesn't love you, then your safety is your primal feeling of safety is being triggered. That activates a stress that's going to make you want to hold on to weight. You know, 1,000 years ago, if the community didn't love you, you were excommunicated. The tribe didn't love you, you're excommunicated. And so then you die because you can't survive on your own in a tribal world. So it's totally hardwired into us that love equals safety.
Concept of loving yourself is key to all of it. Without that, nothing else is going to be sustainable, because if you have a message in your head, I'm worthless piece of crap, and my life doesn't count for anything, and I'm always a failure, and I screw up all the time, and I'll never be good enough, and I'll never make it, and no one loves me, the first thing you do is you know that they're probably there. And Louise Hay of Hay House has a wonderful practice. And if anyone would just do this, really do it for 30 days. And for years, I wrote it out on a prescription. Okay, so here it is. I accept myself unconditionally right now. I write it on the prescription. Their job was to post it on their bathroom mirror. And twice a day, look deep into their eyes and say,
I accept myself unconditionally right now.
Then you wait. You wait for the messages to arrive. You're a piece of shit. There's no way you can love yourself. Look at your size. You see all that cellulite? What about that butt of yours? You're 30 pounds overweight. You're unmarried. You're a middle-aged woman with cats. There's nothing acceptable about you. That's what's going to come up. That's okay. That's okay. If you do this for 30 days, by about day 28, something shifts inside. And you begin to believe it because you're planting a new affirmation. Rudyard Kipling said, I am by nature a dealer in words. And words are the most powerful drug known to humanity. So you are giving yourself different messages. When you start to do that, you begin to have, you develop like a muscle, this witness self that listens to you talk. And the stronger that witness self gets, the healthier you get. As a doctor, let me tell you what self-love does. It improves your hearing, your eyesight, it lowers your blood pressure, it increases pulmonary function, cardiac output, it helps wire in the musculature. So if we had a rampant epidemic of self-love, then our healthcare costs would go down dramatically. So this isn't just some little frou-frou, new age notion. Oh, well, love yourself, honey. This is hardcore science.
So you can improve your life and your mind, and your mindset, your outlook on life can improve. You got to ask just basically three simple questions. Where does my food come from? What went into the food in terms of attitude or care or love or compassion? And then thirdly, what is my intention of doing with the food? Is the food to support me for a good purpose, to do something productive, or is it just entertainment?
Your body's designed to be healthy. Health is the natural state. And if we let our body do what it wants to do in an environment where all the foods are healthy choices, all of them, we're not going to be concerned with these things anymore. And we can live without fear of weight gain, and we can live without fear of degenerative disease.
I see that our feed at WebEx has stopped, but I think we still have an audio going on here at Blog Talk Radio. That was amazing, Jerry.
I'm amazed that it just quit out of nowhere. But people can go find this on their own. HungryForChange.tv, free screening. Or just Hungry for Change could get it for them.
I posted it in Blog Talk Radio chat, and I believe it was also posted in the chat at WebEx. And hungryforchange.tv, I think, will take you to the location where you can sign up for the email list and then see the video for free.
You can also get it on Amazon as a temporary download for about $3, and then you can get a permanent download, I think, for $14, or you can buy it on DVD. But
that
I
was
think
that was great. Thank you.
It puts into perspective what's really going on. I think it leaves off some of the pharmaceutical stuff we brought up. So if people would remember, write to us, and we'll get you the sulfite list, the pharmaceutical nutrient list, and the nutrient sister list, which is what you need to make things work. This not only had a lot of information, but it inspired me to go buy a juicer.
David Wolf is really good at that. He's so good at making you impassioned about. He's really skilled at it. It's very good. More juicing. More cilantro.
I have lost. When WebEx went down, I lost all of the chat. I was going to copy that and look at some of those really good links. So
yeah, chat today at WebEx was on fire. I was watching it on my tablet. It was really great.
If you remember any of those links, or anybody listening has those links, would you please send them to me? Because I lost it all. I got nudged to make a copy, and I didn't do it. I should listen to those.
Yeah. I'm not sure if it's just us talking now, because I don't know if people, if WebEx has ended, that means that all the people who are on at WebEx lost their audio feed, and on Blog Talk Radio, I'm not sure if we are still, well, you and I are still hearing each other, so it means we're still going out on the airways. I just don't know if it's being recorded. We'll find out when we end the episode.
We should let people know that there's no show next week, and the week after that, I think, is when we have, no, I guess it's 2 weeks when we have Jill back. But we're going to also have Patricia Ladara, who has written a book about helping people cross over and some of the things that she's witnessed. So that should be an exciting show, too.
That'll be, I know fun and death usually don't go together, but I think that'll be a very fun and interesting show.
She makes it very, very peaceful and very pleasing to talk about.
That's wonderful.
Thank you, Richard.
All right. Thank you very much. That was great. And we'll see everybody in, there will be a replay of something next week, this following weekend, and then we'll be back on our regularly scheduled programs.
Great.
Thank you, everybody. Bye.
Okay.